And I would listen to these things back. And when I finally listened to I'm Down, for instance, The Hangman Jury and Magic Touch and stuff, I mean, I had to sit down on the side of the sidewalk, you know, and just, I was flipping out. It made me want to rip my shirt off and go to the beach. So, I mean, that's always something that's meant a lot to me when that happens from listening to a song, regardless of what it's singing the words are, regardless of whether it's in tune or not, if the attitude's there, that's rock and roll. If someone was to say, well, geez, Steven, you're 30 now, and what have you learned? What's the secrets of life? Persistence. If you want it bad enough, you can be a rock and roll star. If you want to be the president of the United States, if you want it bad enough, there's ways to go about being it. But if you persist, you will get. Hi, this is Steven Tyler, and you're in the studio with the Bad Boys and Aerosmith on your permanent vacation station.
Writing in the All Music Guide, John Frank and Ed Rivadavia say of Aerosmith's September 1987 comeback album Permanent Vacation, and I quote, "The much ballyhooed reunion of the original Aerosmith lineup had pretty much fallen flat on its face after 1985's hit and miss Done with Mirrors album. But they capitalized on the runaway success of Run DMC's cover of Walk This Way and decided to draft in the day's top hired hands, including Knob Twiddler extraordinaire, the late Bruce Fairbairn as producer, and career-revitalizing song doctors Desmond Child and Jim Vallance. Together, they would craft Permanent Vacation, a valiant effort which proved to be the crucial catalyst in reintroducing Aerosmith to the masses," end quote. As it would turn out, Permanent Vacation was just a stunning example of what would be a triple crown of multi-million sellers from a post-rehab, clean and sober Aerosmith. Lead singer and lyricist Steven Tyler told me the reasons why are obvious.
The thing is you take the drugs away and you blossom into the most beautiful thing. And it's, you know, I was caught behind this cloak of coolness and, hey, man, I mean, for whatever it's worth. And I, you know, it's something that goes along with being real young. And it's fun in the beginning, but those same drugs that make you have a great time on the weekends become an everyday thing. And your body, after a while, the same, look, let's be honest here, okay? Uh-huh. You did cocaine in the beginning? I loved it. It was good. It worked. It was fun. And the only problem was you couldn't get enough and you never felt like as good as the first hit, okay? That's the thing with the human body. People don't realize and they don't want to know that, hey, that first hit's fine, but you're chasing it all night. And then in the morning you wake up, you're looking through your peephole and you're looking out the window for the cops. You spent all night doing one hit and then looking for someone that's not there. And then another hit. Is that fun? You're chasing it. You don't realize that it's not as good as the first time. You can't, you know, you need the time to take away from it. If anybody out there is doing drugs and can stop for a couple months and then chooses to go back to them, hallelujah to you. They won't. You won't. You stop long enough and you go, you mean I was doing that? Forget it.
jackhammer drumming from Joey Kramer that could break cinder blocks, Aerosmith with Magic Touch from Permanent Vacation. I asked the song's co-writer, guitarist Joe Perry, to recall the one song that provided musical common ground for all five members when Aerosmith first was formed in 1970.
I think it was Train Kept a Rollin', the Yardbirds song. But the blues in its form, in the English form of the word, you know, the blues that had been already taken and, you know, redefined by the English bands. I mean, I knew people that were like, you know, these blues players. In fact, we had a guy in our band, Tom Hamilton, and I had a guy named John McGuire, and he really wanted to play blues. He really wanted to, you know, wear baggy jeans and be barefoot and, you know, just play Howlin' Wolf songs and Muddy Waters songs just the way that they did it, you know. And we basically made a decision, you know. We said, no, we want to wear white capizios and play through big amps and wear tight pants, you know. We want to rock. And at that point, he left and stayed up in the woods up in New Hampshire, and Tom and I went down to Boston to seek our fortunes. So we weren't really, like, you know, blues fanatics. I mean, we knew where it came from and we were inspired by it, but we liked the energy and the excitement of the rock. So the song that we had in common was this song called Train Kept a Rollin', which, you're right, it is a blues song. And, you know, as we, you know, kind of learned, you know, who did it, and then we listened back, and it was actually not even a blues song, you know, in the form that that basically the Yardbirds took. You know, if you listen to the Tiny Bradshaw version with all the answer backs and the calling, and it's all, they made a girl, it was all like kind of swingy and big bandy, but the blues was definitely this kind of thing underneath it all. And I don't think we realized it at that point how important it was to us.
I talked to lead singer Steven Tyler with Aerosmith about the choice of title for the album Permanent Vacation.
Now that you've revealed the perils that you and some of the band have been through, is there some dark joke, a little inside joke, a little double entendre with the title Permanent Vacation? Is that what happens?
Not at all.
No?
Absolutely not.
I thought maybe that's what happens if you don't stop. You'll take a permanent vacation.
Oh, it is, positively. Where I got it from was I would come back to school after my summer vacations, and I would still be the same lunatic that I was the year before, and the teachers would say, you haven't changed, Steven. You're still on a permanent vacation.
Oh,
everybody else would be talking about what they did new, and I was just still the same old jerk.
Okay.
Buzzing around at 10,000 million miles an hour.
And that's cool.
So I remember that as a kid, and I take certain phrases and write them down in books, things that I really like.
Mm.
You know, when I
Good
come
line.
Up with them, I fist your face. You know, anything that really catches my fancy, you know. Seasons of Wither, Sweet Emotion. I just write that stuff down. I say, that's a great title for a song. Sometimes I wrap the songs around it.
It's no coincidence that Aerosmith's biggest-selling album in over a decade featured some of the best song doctors in contemporary music collaborating with the Aerosmith songwriters of Tyler and Perry, including Canadian songsmith Holly Knight, who co-wrote the song Ragdoll with Joe and Steven.
Again, Joe and I finished up a Ragdoll, which was titled Ragtime. And I got into a bit of a discussion about whether that was a suitable name, and I immediately took offense. And it took me a while to work that out, but I decided to work with as opposed to against on this album. The whole thing was with and to let go. And this one particular instance, I had finished the lyrics. It was all done, and I was happy with it, but Ragtime wasn't good enough. So if you listen to the lyrics, I'm feeling like a bad boy, just like a bad boy, ripping up a rag doll, like throwing away an old toy. So we flew her up there, and I said, can you come up with something other than rag time? We sat on the floor for a couple of days and came up with a lot of, and I said, nah. And she said, rag doll.
I said, all right. And it works, right?
And it works. So, I mean, that was the kind of thing that I gave her credit on that, because she came up and took the time to do it as a person, and she's also a real nice person. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't as if we went in and wrote, you know, with foreign people. The album has a serious Aerosmith vein running through it.
It's Ragdoll from Aerosmith's 1987 Permanent Vacation album, with percussion played on the bare butt bongos of a couple of Vancouver strippers. Naughty boys. Up next, Aerosmith's bass player Tom Hamilton joins the festivities. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for one of rock's greatest comeback albums ever, Aerosmith's 5 million seller Permanent Vacation.
Hey, this is Joe Perry from Aerosmith. You're in the studio.
Hi, I'm Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler with Redbeard.
And I'm Joey Kramer of Aerosmith, and we are in the studio.
And I'm Redbeard for the stunning late August 1987 comeback, Aerosmith's Permanent Vacation. One of the real treats on the album is a song with the refrain, "Oh boy, don't you line the track." I asked Aerosmith singer Steven Tyler to give me a little history lesson here in the studio.
Guys would be out on the chain gang or whatever, working, and they would line the track. "Oh boy, don't you line the track. Sweet Eloise, don't line." And I mean, so many people did it.
Wow.
Taj Mahal did it. And I went and picked up a couple of old Taj Mahal albums, and I got one, and I said, "No, we don't have the one you're looking for, but I've got this here greatest hit." So I listened to it and heard, "Oh boy, don't you line the track like a war boy, don't you line the track." So it's about a bunch of guys that took these big poles, and if you look at railroad track, there's these metal, two sides of metal, and the wood.
The ties.
And they would spread apart, and the train would derail. So they would come in and line the track back
up. Track.
So this war was... boy, don't you line on the track like a... And I love that. Me and my lady sitting in the shade, talking about the money that you're out of inmates. Singing, "What boy, don't you down track like a what boy, don't you down track. What boy, don't you down track like a what boy, don't you down track." Well, if I could, I surely would. Stand on the rock that Moses stood, singing, "What boy, don't you lie on the track like a what boy, don't you lie on the track. What boy, don't you lie on the track like a what boy, don't you lie on the track." Thanks so much, hoochie, man, my eyes begin to blur. They say I nailed her to the wall. A stitch in time don't mean a thing, don't hang that jewelry. Could make me cry. Baby, no.
Watching down the track. If I could, I surely would stand on the rock that Moses done stood, singing, yeah, boy, don't you lie on the track. Yeah, boy, don't you lie on the track. Hey, boy, don't you lie on the track. Hey, boy, don't you lie on the track.
Fabulous production by the late Bruce Fairburn. Guitarist Joe Perry of Aerosmith even bought a $50 pawn shop guitar to get the right bluesy feel for Hangman Jury on Aerosmith's September 1987 Permanent Vacation. Another veteran Vancouver songwriter, Jim Vallance, who co-wrote a string of million sellers with Bryan Adams, also contributed to this Permanent Vacation from Aerosmith, according to Steven Tyler.
He knew Bruce Fairburn, who produced this album, and he put us together in a room just to see what happened. And actually, we're out clubbing it somewhere, at a strip joint or what have you, because Vancouver's famous for these places. Anyway, so we decided that we had enough of this place, and we went back to his house. He had a 24-track studio in his basement, and we just started playing. We came up with Ragdoll, Magic Touch, and after a couple weeks, I brought Hangman Jury. We worked on the lyrics to that. He helped me with it. So I think that one of the things, if you were to define the process that helped the songwriting team of Tyler Perry out, you could say that in the past, one of the problems I've run up against is I can't write fast enough. I think there's some of the songs that you write the quickest are the best.
Oh, yeah. I've heard so many songwriters say that.
Yeah, but until you're a songwriter, you go, what does this guy mean? Is he going to define it in this dot of an I? I don't know about that. And after a while thinking about it, some of the most definitive songs that really capture the moment are, you know, written. Then again, Hangman Jury, I worked on the lyrics with Jim Vallance for 2 weeks. When I was up in Vancouver, I had my headphones, my little Walkman. I put my skates on, and I roller skate at night on the streets. And, you know, when you roller skate at night on the streets, you own the streets, because no one's out at 11 o'clock. Not up there, anyway. And I would listen to these things back. And when I finally listened to I'm Down, for instance, Hangman Jury and Magic Touch and stuff, I mean, I had to sit down on the side of the sidewalk, you know, and just I was flipping out. It made me want to rip my shirt off and go to the beach. So, I mean, that's always something that's meant a lot to me. When that happens from listening to a song, regardless of what it's singing, the words are, regardless of whether it's in tune or not, if the attitude's there, that's rock and roll. That's why, you know, parents and older people and you know, L7s and Squaros don't understand rock and roll, because they, first of all, they spend all their time intellectualizing on it and criticizing what they don't understand, and they forget that it's, hey, it's attitude. Rock and roll is all pure attitude, man.
You telling lies thinking I can't see. You can't cry because you're laughing.
Originally a rave-up sung by Paul McCartney with the Beatles, I'm Down, appearing on Permanent Vacation, brings three of Aerosmith's members full circle. You see, teenagers Joe Perry and Tom Hamilton never forget seeing Steven Tyler, a singing drummer back then, known as Steven Tallarico, and his New York City band The Strangers, performing in Perry and Hamilton's hometown of Lake Sunapee, New Hampshire.
It was really amazing. It was like you could really see that, you know, it was a whole level above any of the other bands around there.
Especially ours.
Yeah.
Because Tom and I were playing in a band together. We were, you know, working together and just, you were jamming, but our musical taste tended to, I don't want to like put a qualitative, you know, label on anything, but, you know, we were into the MC5 and Fleetwood Mac and the Yardbirds and, you know, like just loud and raunchy rock and roll, you know, which was our, you know, stock and trade for our little band of, you know, we had a drummer and we would just flail and then of course Steven's band, you know, it was
we did
famous for
stuff
there,
like,
you know?
Train Kept a Rolling and
yeah, no, you guys did, and that was the common ground, you know, everybody that gets together with a band, you know, with other guys, there's always like one or two songs that hook them in. We, you know, there's a commonality of taste, at least in one place, and with. And that was where our bands joined. Steven's band played the Yardbirds song, Train Kept a Rollin', and we played it. So, you know, there was that one place where the two spheres or the two orbits met, you know. And in that summer, over a couple of summers, you know, like we knew him. He would come up and, you know, I can remember one summer everybody was all excited because they had a single on the jukebox called The Sun. And it was like, whoa, there's a single. They have a single out. They have a record deal and all that. So, I mean, they were... Clearly, they were writing their own songs and stuff. They were way ahead of what we were doing. I mean, we were 16 years old, you know. And then one summer, as we talked about in the book, Steven was leaving that band and he needed an audition tape for it. I guess he was going to, like, send a tape to Jeff Beck or something. And we played backup on a song called I'm Down, a Beatles song. And then we started jamming. And then later that summer, we decided to... hook up in New York, or in Boston, you know. And, you know, over a couple of months, Steven decided he wanted to step out from behind the drums and get out in front again, you know.
A third song doctor, Desmond Child, contributed to two of the biggest hits on Permanent Vacation. Here again, Aerosmith's Steven Tyler.
Give you a rough idea how good this guy is. I was late the second day, and he was in there with Joe alone, and they wrote Hearts Done Time. It was something that Joe had been working on. He showed Desmond, and Desmond... you know, it's like he's like an old lady with a patchwork quilt, little patches and pieces. You put it together and make sense out of stuff. Yeah. Desmond's a genius in that.
That is a talent.
And he's a real spiritual guy. You know, he's a weirdo, Ultimus Maximus, okay. But he's a real spiritual guy, and if you can look into his eyes, you can really follow him, because he's that deep.
Yeah. on Time from Permanent Vacation features Aerosmith collaborating with song doctor Desmond Child. Coming up next, Aerosmith's Steven Tyler describes what his idea of a permanent vacation was when this album came out. A hint, lodging was 30 feet down under the sea, and room service was delivered by a guy wearing a mask. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for one of rock's greatest comeback albums ever, the 5 million plus seller Permanent Vacation.
Hey, this is Joey Kramer.
And Joe Perry.
Tom Hamilton.
Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to Radio Free Aerosmith.
You're in the studio?
November, December, January, I was in the studio with Joe every day for a couple hours. And every day I walked out of there, I had a cassette in my back pocket with a song. I'm telling you, wow. It was phenomenal.
Wow. Song a day, it's like multiple vitamins.
Well, you know, they built like that, but every day there was something added. It's like the story about the guy that built a house right in front of this tree, and he decides to put the door there, but he can't get out his front door because this huge tree is there, and all he has is a tiny little hatchet, and he goes, I'll never get it down. I can't go out. And every day he goes out and takes one swipe. And in a month, that tree was down, this huge tree. And it's the same thing with an album or with anything you want to be in the world or do. Persistence. I like that little train. I think I can. That positive. If someone was to say, well, geez, Steven, what have you learned? What's the secrets of life? Persistence. If you want it bad enough, you can be a rock and roll star. If you want to be the president of the United States, if you want it bad enough, there's ways to go about being it. But if you persist, you will get. So this album was done like that, and the diligence that was taken you know, it sounds like, wow, Steven, this is a very clinical album you got here.
Bull, no.
Exactly. What happened because of all that was it made us take a step backwards and say, look, let's try it. That was the attitude to doing this album. It was, let me try to put it to you this way. On the last album, it was no synthesizers.
Okay.
Everyone uses synthesizers, not us, not Aerosmith.
We're Aerosmith, right.
Which, getting out of our own way on this album, we were to see that, well, who would use a synthesizer on an Aerosmith song anyway? Just to stick it in and put it on a Bach choir setting? Mm-hmm. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. What you do is you fatten up the bass by putting a little plucked metal on the bottom. You got a song like Dude Looks Like a Lady.
wondered what Aerosmith lead singer Steven Tyler did for his personal vacation.
It used to be I would go away and my idea of fun was the infamous Aerosmith Lost Weekend with a bag of cocaine, and I wouldn't remember who I was what with, what I did, all except, oh, you know, man, I had a great time, man. Yeah. I mean, come on. I remember nothing. So, but anyway, I now choose to throw on some tanks and go down and visit the other part of the earth where no one hangs. It's 30 feet down. You got to take tanks down, and you stay there overnight.
No.
Oh, yeah, no. It's the greatest.
No, wait a minute.
It's the greatest.
You go down 30 feet underwater.
It's in a lagoon. It's on the ocean. It's right off of, it's in Key Largo. It's called Jules Undersea Lodge. And you go down, and they got tethers. You just put a mouthpiece in, and you go down, and you come up underneath, and you're in this little lodge, and you're all alone down there for a night. You can stay in there for a weekend or a night.
That is too weird.
It's just like being on the moon. Honest to God, you're pressurized. It's
doing many sounds.
It's 35% oxygen. It's real quiet. You look out the windows, the portholes, 5 feet around, huge porthole windows, and you see these big angelfish and groupers and.
And you stay down there overnight?
You stay down there all night. As a matter of fact, the guy will bring pizza down if you want it. I said, I'm going down.
No.
We're staying down.
There's a guy outside your door in a mask with bubbles coming out and with a pizza.
Really? I'm going down.
I'm going down.
I'm a big ballad freak, you know? It stirs up emotions that are really lying dormant. It's the type of thing that most rock and roll, good time rock and roll, stuff that I like to listen to all the time, stirs up a kick-ass attitude. Every once in a while, it touches on love and makes me think about my old lady and stirs up those emotions. There's not enough of it, I don't think. You know, and it's like anything else. It stirs an emotion that we all got inside of us. I mean, you know, guys would rather go out and roll their sleeves up and show their tattoo than say, you know, I love you, baby. Except at late at night after 5 beers, you know, in which case they're usually 10 beer wonders and it doesn't matter anyway, right? Come here, baby. So, but anyway, yeah, I really like the ballads.
Eric Clapton is quoted as saying that the music of Robert Johnson, the seminal Delta blues man, is a fundamental reference point for everything musical that Clapton has done. I asked Joe Perry of Aerosmith if he can relate to that Clapton statement.
He's a musician, and it's a touchstone for him. And I think that anybody that likes music and loves music has certain songs that do that for them, you know. And obviously, you know, as a creative person and an artist and a musician, those landmarks as far as music goes are going to be a lot stronger and more of an influence for Eric than they would be for somebody else. But we all have them, you know. It could be the first time you heard Dream On when you're at a date, and then you put that song on and it brings you back to the to that point in time when you were having a great time in your life. And so it kind of presses the reset button. So in a very simplistic kind of way, that's what it does. That's how you can relate to that. If you're not Eric Clapton and you want to try and understand what that quote is. But I think that, I have a few songs and a few artists that I feel like, for me, and I think most artists do. I think all painters do, writers do. I mean, writers will go back and they'll read Old Man and the Sea, and it'll be a total reset button for them.
And what reboots Joe Perry's hard drive when he needs it?
Definitely Muddy Waters, and it's his early stuff, his very early stuff. Fred McDowell and Chuck Berry.
Yeah. to number 3 and introducing Aerosmith to a whole new generation via MTV. That's Angel from the 5 million plus platinum seller Permanent Vacation. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, the guys in Aerosmith. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.